You're listening to the Balado de la Chaire, a podcast proposed by the Raoul Dandurand Chair in Strategic and Diplomatic Studies at the Université du Québec à Montréal. Hope you enjoy it.
I'm Bruno Charbonneau, very happy to see you all here this morning. Some returning faces and some new ones, so very happy to see you all here today. So just allow me, if you don't know me, to present myself properly. I'm Bruno Charbonneau. I have multiple hats, so I apologize for that. Professor at the Royal Military College Saint-Jean, about 30 minutes south of here. I'm also director there of the Critique Research Center, which is the Center for Crisis and Security Governance. I'm also part of the Chaire Raoul-Dandurand here at UQAM as the director of the Centre Franco-Paix and Conflict Resolution. And I'm also founding president, with a few colleagues here, of the Climate Security Association of Canada, among other things. I'm also working with the Canadian, part of the editorial team of the Canadian Military Journal, and I'm mentioning that one because we have a special issue coming up. I think we have a slide somewhere at some point. You'll see it coming up in about a month on climate security. So if you're interested, I have a piece there. Simon does. Dana Shree, and who else in the room has a piece here? They're probably not, the others are not here, unfortunately, but we do have an upcoming special issue at the Canadian Military Journal. So I like to begin by thanking everyone for not only being here, but all of those who've made this possible. So allow me to first thank my colleagues and friends from the Climate Security Association of Canada. In the room, Gabrielle Daou. Where's Gabrielle? I can't see her. Gabrielle all the way in the back. Tom Deligianis here. Pauline also has been working with us recently. Where's Pauline? I can't see her. Not in the room, but you've seen Pauline Beaudu. And Will Greaves, who is at the University of Victoria, is not here with us this week. But thank you for your work, for your friendship, for trusting me also in embarking in this endeavor that we all started together last year. Special thanks also to my friends and colleagues of the Chaire Raoul-Dandurand here at UQAM, especially we've all gotten emails from them, Françoise in the back, Louis, Daphne, I can't see them all, but you probably know them, Nicolas also, because without them, really, this thing is not happening. They're very good, the Chaire Raoul-Dandurand Strategic and Diplomatic Studies. It's coming up on 25 years or something. And so we're very good at doing this sort of event. But without these people, these things would not happen and their success would not be guaranteed. I can tell you that. Last but not least, I also want to acknowledge and thank our financial supporters, the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada, our friends from the OIF, Organisation Internationale de la Francophonie, who have basically been with the Centre Franco-Paix since its beginning in 2016. We have Axel here somewhere who represent them over there. Hello, Axel. And also the NATO Center for Maritime Research and Experimentation, the CMRE, who have helped and supported financially our event this week. So, for those of you who were here last year, last March 2023, when we officially launched the Climate Security Association in Canada, as you probably already know, one of our key objectives was to contribute to building a Canadian climate security community. Not exclusive to Canada, obviously, very international, but certainly trying to come up with a way to bring people together, basically. And since then, since we organized that event, we had another one last February at the University of Victoria that focused on West Coast and Pacific issues. And more importantly, it was a time when we launched the fellowship program. And our students are here. Can they raise their hands? Yeah, we have 4 out of 5 who came back to Montreal. So there are our first fellows of the Climate Security Association Fellowship Program. Basically, we brought them in, Victoria, to present their work, and now they have a paper to write for the association. But we provide mentorship and obviously this sort of networking opportunity for them. The idea, obviously, here is to mentor and support the next generation of climate security scientists and professionals. And I want to thank particularly Will Greaves, our colleague at Victoria, who's the lead on this program. Also, since last March, last October, the initial operating capability of the NATO Climate Change and Security Center of Excellence, CASCO, was achieved. full operational capabilities expected in the second half of 2024, although the director here might contradict me later on in a few minutes. Last July, also, you probably know that NATO published its greenhouse gases reporting methodology, as well as a compendium of best practice. In Canada, Global Affairs of Canada, Sarah and her team, and a few of them are here today and will be with us this week, are building up their climate security unit. While last December, the Department of National Defense also published the Defense Climate and Sustainability Strategy. All of this to say that since we last met last March in 2023, much has been done in the field of climate security. I'm not even mentioning and talking about the rapidly evolving research literature and scientific projects, obviously, related to climate change and security. But as I'm sure you know, while much has been done so far and evolving quite rapidly, there is still a very, very, very far way to go. We have barely begun. And arguably, the next steps will be harder. Institutionalization, operationalization of climate security, as Sharon Burke put it, achieving climate security, are and will be tough challenges to overcome. Some of you might disagree, but I'd say that the challenge begins also with a significant climate literacy gap. Generally speaking, although this is evolving quickly and varies between organizations, knowledge about climate change is limited in the defense and security sector, sometimes approached as just another issue like any other. The tremendous scale, enormity, and complexity of the challenges that come with climate change, or as I like to call the radical possibilities of climate change, are hard to grasp and are too easily dismissed or ignored, especially when short-term crises emerge. And where when the scale, enormity, scope, complexity of the challenge are understood, short-term priorities and or slow and inefficient decision-making processes can be obstacles to achieving climate security. So once you consider tremendous scales involved, the potential for cascading effects, for instance, the timeline, the tipping point, so on and so forth, you must also consider, I would say, what the consequences are for government, for governance, for decision-making, organizational structures and culture, and so on and so forth. That also applies to academic research. Most of what we do, especially those of us like me who do social sciences, is based on past data and forensic methods, which is expected and fine in several ways, of course. But academic research faces a challenge that is where we are uncomfortable with, that we are uncomfortable with. It must deal with the future under climate change conditions, with all that implies for our catalog of theoretical frameworks, conceptualization, methodologies. I have in mind here, among other things, everything being done and around the concept of the Anthropocene. I think that this is crucial because the realm of future possibilities cannot be left to the monopoly of billionaires or modelization methods, AI, and such machine learning tools. Although, to be clear, me and Alex will present on that later today. All of this to say that, yes, we must talk about, adapt to, and prevent the security consequences of climate change, but this is not enough as far as I'm concerned. We must call into question, are we of doing and thinking, we must transform our organization's procedure, processes, and methods. So, during the next 2 days, we'll be hearing from numerous scholars, experts, practitioners, many of you here in the room, about the various security challenges of climate change. Our goals, to be succinct, are twofold. One is to encourage very open and free exchanges of ideas, obviously. Ideally, I like to think that we can be future-oriented, forward-looking, that is, talking also what needs to be done, what can we do, what should we do, given the challenges in front of us. I think this is particularly a difficult challenge for academics, as I put it a moment ago, in social sciences anyway, because we tend to do that sort of forensic analysis based on what we know about the past. To encourage these exchanges, we asked our speakers to talk about 12 to 15 minutes each at the very most, so that we can then open the discussion to the floor. So I would really, I'm talking in particular to our moderators today to be very strict with time, because I think we have a small and big enough group to have that sort of conversation here that I'm really hoping to see. So we have a first great roundtable which set the stage for the rest of the day, examining the emergence and the evolution of the climate security field. A second panel will explore challenges on the energy transition, both for military organizations and from a geopolitical perspective. A third panel will discuss different challenges associated with the production of knowledge and expertise in the realm of climate security. Tomorrow, we have four panels. The first one will explore the issue of military carbon emissions. A second one will elaborate on a range of military policy challenges. Panel six will offer a global and comparative perspective on what climate security means for different regions of the world. And panel seven will focus on civil-military cooperation in climate-related emergencies. Before I introduce our keynote speaker for this morning, I just want to say a few points. We are live online, so just be aware of that. We are recording, so that will be available in a few weeks, or I don't know. I'm not an IT guy. Although back home I am when the kids and wife demand a Wi-Fi. Sorry. but I'm saying that, though, if some of you are not sure about being online or recorded now, you can tell us also, and we can edit the content later on. For our speakers, it means that you need also to speak very clearly into the microphone, please, for people online joining us online. I would also ask everyone to respect Chatham House rules, so you can cite people but not name them. And if you need anything, have questions about anything, you can ask me, Pauline, Françoise, or the team here at Francope, and Charles Lanzarin will be happy to help. So, it is my very great pleasure to welcome and introduce you to our keynote speaker, Director of CASCO, the Climate Change and Security Center of Excellence of NATO, Monsieur Mathieu Bussière. Monsieur Bussière joined the Canadian Department of National Defense in 2004. He has held several positions within the policy group, the Canadian Joint Operational Command, CJOC, and at NATO headquarters on a wide variety of files, including defense policy, operational planning, bilateral and multilateral defense relationships, and files related to Canadian Armed Forces at home and abroad. From 2015 to 2016, he was Deputy Director in the Directorate of Western Hemisphere Policy, leading a team providing advice on national matters and managing a range of issues related to Canada-U.S. bilateral defense relationship, including the management of the Permanent Joint Board on Defense, and interactions with NORAD. From 2016 to 2020, he was Program Manager for the Directorate of Strategic Coordination and Outreach. In this role, he participated in the development, implementation, management of several outreach programs with external defense and security experts. He was also overseeing the Policy Officer Recruitment Program. From 2020 to 2023, he was the Defense Counselor at the Joint Canadian Delegation to NATO, managing files related to NATO's defense and deterrence policy and defense planning. Monsieur Bussière holds a master's in political science and speaks fluently in French and English. Please join me in welcoming Monsieur Mathieu Bussière.
Just want to, for the record, I'm also the IT pro at home, but my staff knows I'm not the IT pro at the office. Merci beaucoup. Merci Bruno, merci à la chère Raoul Dandurand, merci au Centre Francopais. Thank you to the Climate Security Association of Canada for hosting this. Quite pleased to be here. We're in Montreal, the home of CASCO, so it's quite easy to come here and participate, and our staff is here in great numbers, which also shows the interest we have in the discussions that will happen over the next 2 days, but also afterwards, where you're hosting SAS 182, which is also an important tool for us when it comes to identifying the challenges that comes with climate change and security. I was about to make jokes about the eclipse today, but I'll spare that because I think it's quite the marvelous occasion we have today to be the witnesses of quite a natural delight. And it fits well with the program of climate change, I think. So I hope you will all enjoy that spectacular event this afternoon. I would also thank UCAM for hosting today, because these are nice facilities and we're certainly happy to be here with you. Being a keynote speaker is challenging because you have to talk about a bit of everything, but without going too much into details to steal the show from the panelists. And I was looking at the agenda today. I can say that, you know, this is quite a busy and interesting program for the next 2 days. So looking forward to hear from you, looking forward for my staff and my team to hear for you and to exchange with you as well. So please feel free to engage with them and ask questions about Casco, not only to me, and just make sure that we all share the burden. Covers a lot of ground ranging from scientific research to policy implications, regional dynamics. You named a few, Bruno. I think it's quite a full plate. I will try to use an angle that is slightly different, talk about what we do at Casco, obviously explain a bit what a center of excellence is, but also maybe talk about the opportunities, especially for us as a center that comes with the climate change and security area of work and the work that you all do now and in the coming years as well. So I've been in position for the last 6 months, and one of the things obviously that really struck me and I'm sure members of my team is the breadth of expertise that has been built around climate security, and especially in the last few years. And Bruno said it's only the beginning. We're expecting a lot more, and a lot more information will be available, a lot more analysis will be produced, and hopefully more people will also understand the challenges that come and the implications of climate change for security. Obviously, there's a challenge as well that comes with that, which is to decipher, you know, and pick and identify which of these research analysis discussions thought leaders would be more appropriate for us anyway as a center to conduct our business. And we certainly will be doing that with your collaboration in the coming months and years. You know, the environment research and study is not something new, and specifically not in a NATO context. For a long time, I think allies have approached challenges with specific objectives in mind when it comes to environment security. And, you know, obviously for NATO, the importance of securing and protecting energy supplies has always been a priority and still is. The management of aging infrastructure and environmental remediation activities have also been part of our nation's environmental protection. When I joined in 2004, we were talking about cleaning up radar sites in the north, and we're still talking about cleaning up radar sites in the north. So we're still a long way from there, but that shows that, you know, these questions were asked way before 2020, 2021. Recently, obviously, and you are probably familiar with that, NATO has endorsed a action plan on climate change and security with four pillars that really have put the climate change agenda and hyperdrive, I would say, and I'll talk about the creation and foundation of the center later on, but obviously one is related to the other. But along the way, there were numerous individuals, organizations, institutions that have played a crucial role, and some of you are here today. The implications for global security, for our future as an alliance, as a cohesion between ourselves and coordination in our areas of work is very important. And this is one of the key messages that I would like to send today is, even if we are all doing our research and our activities in our own offices, we should not shy away for more cooperation, and not only in these conferences, but on a day-to-day basis. And I certainly is one of my objectives as the director of the center. So, the vision of NATO is obviously, and you know, it is quite a daunting task to become a leading international organization when it comes to understanding and adapting to security implications of climate change. And Samu will probably be a better place than I am to speak to this. But I would say that, and I think Bruno mentioned it in passing, but right now there's priorities, there are short-term priorities that are certainly making it difficult for climate change and security advocates to being heard. I will have to say, you know, the war in Ukraine, the ongoing pressure security-wise on European allies and partners, deteriorating global security environment, when we talk about the Middle East, but also the rise of China, increases threats across all domains. For us as an alliance and for us as nations. So we could argue that climate change is a lower priority than it was in 2021 when the action plan was agreed and when Canada also announced that it would host the Center of Excellence on Climate Change and Security. Nations are increasing defense spending, that's true, and they want to revamp their depleted arsenal that was graciously offered to Ukraine. It's definitely competing with short-term priorities. And we could also argue that the current geopolitical instability will be a driver to do just more of the same stuff that we've done for decades and investing in platforms that have been proven in the battlefield. And this is largely true. I don't think we can divert from that snapping our fingers. But at the same time, and this is my message of positiveness, I think there's an opportunity to transform. And if there's a message, again, that I would like to pass on in this speech is let's not waste a good opportunity. NATO has spent several decades talking about transforming with different levels of success, but it's definitely another time for this. I think our defense institutions have shown many times in the past that they can transform into the face of new challenges, and this is just a new one. So the transformation is not only to make sure that our carbon footprint is reduced or eliminated. The way we like to talk about this at the center is the transformation that we hope to be achieving will make our military more efficient, more lethal, more resilient, and at the same time, better equipped to face the challenges of climate change, and not only when we talk about mitigation, but also and mostly when we talk about adaptation. I'll come back to this, but just put that aside for a second and talk about COEs in general, Center of Excellence, which I have found out in my last 6 months are not as well known as one would think. So climate change security on climate, the Center of Excellence on Climate Change and Security has been established, initial operational capacity, as Bruno said, last October. 12 sponsoring nations have actually agreed to provide staff and resources to it, which is quite an achievement in itself. But before we go into what CASCO is, which will be at the tail end of my speech, I want to talk mainly about what a center of excellence is. And there's 29 of those that are NATO accredited. Ours is not yet, but hopefully in the coming weeks or months, we will be able to secure that from NATO, and that gives us a whole slew of new tools to work with. So a COE is not necessarily a group of nations that come together. Some of them are nationally owned. And the one in Norway, for example, is fully staffed by Norwegian staff personnel. Ours has 12, others have 6, others 5. The structures and the composition of teams is quite different from one another, but we all have the same objectives, which is, you know, to provide a specific expertise to NATO and to nations about a specific topic. In our case, it's climate change. Others are more military focused and very niche, like military engineering. Ours, we like to see it as more cross-cutting, multi-sectorial, and which also means that we have a community of interest that is much wider than others. And I'll come back to the cooperation aspect at the tail end of my presentation. So COEs are really unique in the fact that they're not, they don't belong to any governments, they don't belong to NATO, they are an independent structure, which is only overseen by a steering committee composed of representatives from the 12 sponsoring nations. These meet one or twice per year. This is where I update the status of the center and I expose our plans or priorities for the next year and even further in the future. And then we get approval or we tweak our plans based on the input from the sponsoring nations who are really our bosses when it comes to the work that we're doing. So our task is really to convince our stakeholders, but also the rest of the community of the added value of our products. And I certainly hope that my team this week will be able to do that. But please keep in mind that we're a very young organization and we're still sinking our teeth into the issue. So as we do that and as we develop our products and know our center of excellence is actually working, we also learn ourselves. So we talked about the action plan at the summit in 2021 in Brussels. Prime Minister Trudeau announced the creation of the center. Then he announced Canada being the framework nation. What does it mean being a framework nation? It's offering the support of hosting, not only physically, but also administratively and technically, the center itself, as well as offering the lion's share of personnel. So while we have experts, we also have a good amount of people that are administrative and support staff, and these are provided by Canada at no cost to the rest of the sponsoring nations. So I talked about the fact that we probably have one of the highest numbers in terms of memberships at 12, which is one third of the entire alliance, more or less, which is very good news for our topics. It helps us actually attract attention and making sure that the nations that have invested in our center can participate, but also, you know, it's a two-way street. We can leverage the resources that are available to us, and we're trying to do so. The other thing that I would also point out is that five of the G7 nations are part of these 12, and we certainly hope to increase the membership in the future, especially after the accreditation is secured. I will put the CASCO subject aside for a second and talk a bit about what we will see this week, but specifically an item that is probably close to our heart at the center, which is the military aspect of adapting and mitigating to the challenges of climate change. And you will hear probably several times today and tomorrow that climate change can and will erupt, disrupt the critical ecosystems, the resources, infrastructure, and services across the globe. It will lead to water and food scarcity, health issues, severe loss of livelihoods, and the likes. We all know these impacts, and we all know that they may become catalysts for crisis across the globe, especially in regions that are more affected by climate change. But the angle that I would like to take here is when we think about climate security challenges, we also, from our perspective, think about the opportunities that come with it. And I see four areas and the defense institutions that are certainly some things that we will be interested in looking into in more detail. The four areas is obviously NATO operating environment, but also assets and infrastructures, the processes, and I think Bruno touched upon this, and then the people. And operationally, we know extreme weather, and there's already cases, well-documented, extreme weather events such as elevated temperatures, drought, wildfires, and then flooding weaken allied forces' operational effectiveness. The center, we consider the impact of climate change to be both horizontal and vertical, and in that sense, it means that it will affect the tactical units on the ground, it will affect the operational commanders' thinking, and it will affect the decisions that will be made at the strategic level. And horizontally, it will affect all domains, including space and cyber. So, you know, these need to be taken in consideration, not in silo, not in isolation, but as part of the transformation efforts that NATO is hoping to achieve. And we need to collectively develop a good understanding of what this means for the defense posture in general. Defense deterrence is at the center of what NATO does. However, when we talk about climate change, it's probably not as in your face, as we say, as other issues more conventionally linked to the science of warfare. And that's where our objective at the center, but also as a community of interest, is quite challenging, but still something that needs to be done. Then we talk about assets, and we also here observed the impacts of climate change on equipment, capabilities. You know, there's weather sensitivity all around. The climate changes increase the stress on the resilience of assets. Intense winds, storms, the increased salinity of water actually has, decreased salinity, I would say, has impact on performance and intelligence gathering capabilities, et cetera, et cetera. So we're not only tested on the equipment part, we're tested also on an infrastructure part for the same reasons, water levels rising, et cetera, et cetera, the melting permafrost in our case, extreme weather events, But we have seen some creative ideas already, and it's not only new ones, it's old ones, and the way we build our infrastructure, the way we prepare for these events. And we have seen more efficient weapon platform system being designed. We have seen eco-friendly infrastructure being stood up. There's more work that is being done, and there's certainly a very interesting domain to look into right now. However, that said, you know, this is also a domain that is quite guarded by nations. So obviously, from our perspective, more cooperation, more collective experimentation is needed to be able to make together the efforts and transform as an alliance and not nationally. So we talked about processes, and I think Bruno touched about this. I will not repeat it, but there's a couple of things that are very important from a NATO perspective. My experience with the NATO defense planning process showed me that climate change aspects of it are only starting to become taken into account. I think more work needs to be done there. We need to be able to evaluate what is the resilience, but also the carbon footprint of platforms that we ask nations to develop. It means reviewing the processes, not completely changing them, but reviewing them to take that in consideration. We know that in terms of defense planning and military planning, these things are not fully taken in consideration, and there is a requirement there as well. The industry is also already well placed when it comes to identifying what they do in terms of carbon emission, and they take steps to reduce their carbon footprint. Pressure in the future will be on the armed forces to do the same. It's not illegal, as one of my colleagues say, it's not a legal imperative, but it is a moral one, and we need to take that in consideration as we move forward. Lastly, people, defense's biggest asset, or equally vulnerable, and obviously raising temperature globally poses a direct threat to military operations, impact the physical, mental health. We see that, it's already documented. And we're experiencing the consequences across the board, but the changes need to happen as well across the board. And when we're talking about this, it's not only about the way we're operating in theater, it's also how we train, how we exercise. It goes to the doctrine development, our standards. So pretty much everything that touches on personnel at NATO needs to be, and again, it's not about changing completely the way we're doing things, it's to be able to inject our views and our solutions when it comes to adapting to climate change. So trying to encapsulate the points that I was making on the four pillars is, there's no way we can do that in isolation. There's no way climate change and security can be treated as a separate line of work at NATO or elsewhere. We talk about strategies, and I see a lot of those that have been developed nationally. We talk about a lot of specialists nationally as well. And they are making headways and trying to convince other parts of the big defense organizations to change and adapt. And we see progress, but more needs to be done and faster. So, this is one of the challenges, and we certainly hope that the center can help in doing that. The addressing in parallel is probably not enough from our standpoint. And we certainly hope to be able to address in symbiotic way with other activities that are being done. And in that sense, if I can identify one of our partners, which is Allied Command Transformation at Norfolk, that is doing a lot of thinking about not only how to transform the armed forces, but also how to look at warfare development in the future. I think it's a big part of the puzzle for us. They have published their strategic foresight analysis last year, in January, but it was made in 2023, and identifies climate change as one of the drivers for instability, and clearly something that we take very seriously. So no one, or the climate will not wait or pause for us to make these changes, so better start right away, and we certainly hope that with your help, the center can at least be a part of this increased pressure on decision makers and military leadership to take climate change security, adaptation, and mitigation as a priority, as we all do. I'll turn to CASCO. quickly to explain what we do. We certainly hope that Casco will play a pivotal role in harnessing the opportunities that I just talked about. It's not being the creator of knowledge, it's being a translator of knowledge. We hope that all the good things that are being done and the ones that will be done in the future, some of them being sponsored by us, but others that are already underway and are already bearing fruit, will be able to take what we believe is the best and transform it into the advices that are necessary to support these decisions I was talking about. And it's taking NATO strategic commitments on climate change and making sure that we can support the policy discussions on that, but also the education programs and the operational considerations. So first, it's integrating climate security challenges into NATO and national policy. And it's making sure that we harness the research and analysis that is being there and translate it into policy and fostering integration across the various teams that we talked about, or you will talk about in the next 2 days, and try to make, you know, a selling argument to the decision makers. Second, it's building climate literacy. You talked about that, Bruno, through education and training. And, you know, it's not only being able to develop our own products, it's also being able to support and participate in the products of others. We know other centers of excellence have already developed programs when it comes to climate change and security. We know that national authorities have developed some programs as well. So it's being part of this and also identify where the gaps are to make sure that we can offer our services where it's required. Third, it's supporting the, you know, security, climate change and security injection into operational and tactical plans. Challenging one, but it seeks to inform NATO doctrine and the STANAGs, making sure that climate change aspects are taken into consideration when we're reviewing those. It includes conducting gap analysis when required and when asked by NATO or by nations. And it's ensuring that the capabilities, especially when we come to planning process, take climate security imperatives into consideration. So it's an ambitious plan, but as I said, it's not done in isolation. And we're at 75th anniversary of NATO, so we've been working together for quite a while. And we've been expanding our membership as well. And we think that this is what makes the strength of the alliance, is the spirit of cooperation and collaboration. At Casco, we do have a specific branch that really emphasizes this point, specifically on outreach and engagement, not only with NATO institution, enterprise, allies, and partners, but also with the wider community, other international organizations, European Union, United Nations, but also others that are affected by climate change. It's also interacting with you, the academic community, the scientists, the think tank, industry, and other governmental institutions to make sure that we encapsulate the best of what's being done when it comes to climate change. So as I said, there are significant challenges, and Bruno highlighted them more or better than I did, but there's also opportunities, and that's the message of positiveness, if I may, about the fact that I think we're hopefully turning a corner at one point in the near future, and the short-term priorities are well understood and taken into consideration, but also we do not forget the importance of injecting the long-term preoccupation when we revamp our armed forces. Collective efforts of you, of the organizations, the institutions around the world, but mainly in the allied community, will be lead, we believe, to significant advancement in our understanding, but also in the outcomes and practical solutions to climate change. So, you know, I know it's challenging to bridge the gap between science and policy, and specifically when we're in the tail end of a electoral cycle in different countries. But I think we need to move forward with pragmatic and actionable solutions based on the expert knowledge, but also taking in consideration the political and military imperatives that are, you know, the nature of our democracies. So it's essential that when we support decision making, we provide that kind of perspective as well. it's not an easy task, and certainly not one that we would like, because it will require negotiations and probably some diluting. But nevertheless, if we want to be able to seek positive decisions and actions, I think we have to be able to make some compromises. And this, as difficult and challenging it may seem, for science and researchers, is, I think, something that needs to be done. Positive, but realistic. Thank you very much for having listened to me. I certainly hope that we can engage today and tomorrow. Again, I said my team is here today, and tomorrow they'll be presenting. Please do not shy away from a conversation, and they're all excellent people. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Balado de la Chaire. Stay tuned to our activities and publications by visiting our social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. You can also visit our website at www.dendurant.ucam.ca. On this site, you can also subscribe to our newsletter. Finally, if you like this podcast, please let us know on your favorite listening platform. As usual, a 5-star rating is greatly appreciated. See you soon.